Hear what's going on in your community. Stay tuned to Community Comment on 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge, presented by Professional Floor Covering.
And welcome into Community Comment. We are presented by Professional Floor Covering. Professional Floor Covering, of course, bringing you everything you need for your home, be it your cabinets, your flooring, maybe your bathrooms and your showers. Let their team help you with a design choice for your shower that you can unwind and relax in. A lot going on in the world today, and nothing like having a place you can relax in, relax to, kind of hide away from the world. Well, they can help you with everything from color and material choices to size and arrangement. A lot of designs for you if you're looking at a shower. They can do glass enclosures, which is kind of nice. And maybe you have a tub in there that you're just saying that tub is old and you want to get rid of it and you want to go with something new. Well, they've got some tub-to-shower conversions you just have to see. They can turn your standard bathroom into a luxurious spa-like space with a tub-to-shower conversion. And their conversions can also drastically improve the quality of life for those who have trouble lifting their legs up and over the wall of a standard tub. And, of course, if you are thinking you need a tub, they've got some built-in to standalone tubs as well. Check them out. You can check them out online, proflr.com. Or stop in and see them at 713 Park Avenue in Beaver Dam. Again, this is Community Comment, and today we are inviting in our guest. We're going to be talking right now with Representative Andrew Heisel of the 48th Assembly District. Andrew, good morning.
Hey, Justin, how you doing?
You know what? I am doing very, very well. I wish the weather was going to be a little bit nicer today, but it looks like South Central Wisconsin might see some rain.
Yeah, I think so.
But I've been talking with a couple of farmers in the area, and everybody says we need it. So I'm never going to argue when a farmer says they need rain.
And my lawn agrees with you, so it needs some water.
Yeah, I think we probably all could use a little bit more on our lawns as well. There's a few spots that aren't looking as green as I would like them to be. But Andrew, of course, we don't bring you on necessarily to talk about the weather. We like to bring you on because we like to get a little insight and information into what's going on with our state government. And of course, you are the man to give us a lot of that insight. So let's go ahead and kind of kick right off into the start of things. We just finished up the month of May. We're now into the month of June. You guys had a special session that happened in May as well. Can you give a little background on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was kind of the big happening that occurred in May. Was we were called into a special session to consider a proposal that was put together between Governor Tony Evers and leadership in the Republican leadership of the state legislature. And so we considered that. It passed the assembly. It did not pass in the Senate, and it's officially dead, I guess you would say, unless somebody tries to bring it back.
Now, for people who don't quite understand like how this works, I mean, what does it take to bring, you know, these kind of special bills back into play and have people kind of talk about them again?
Yeah, it's a good question, Justin. It really is pretty straightforward and pretty easy. For either the governor can call it an extraordinary session, the legislature can call a special session, because we're not supposed to be in session right now, so they can do that. We can come back in. I think the thing that would stop them is that they probably, unless something is majorly changed, this same deal would probably fail again. So they likely probably won't do either of those things. I could be wrong. Can't predict the future with certainty, but based on what I'm hearing, I think it's not happening.
Now, when it comes to discussions on topics like this and deciding, you know, kind of what should happen moving forward, I mean, is this something where people are having conversations behind closed doors? Because I know that was kind of one of the concerns that was happening in regards to this particular special session.
Yeah, another good question. So essentially what happened was this was a deal that was put together with certain leadership folks, the governor's office, and then some leaders in the Republican state legislature. And yeah, it wasn't really, there was a large number of legislators, myself included, that weren't brought into the discussion at all. So we were given actually 1 hour notice. I got 1 hour notice before this was released. And yeah, as a result, I think that's part of the reason why it failed.
Now, this, I mean, that's not typical, right? I mean, for people who maybe don't spend a lot of time looking at how things run governmentally, I mean, generally, you guys get information about kind of these proposed, you know, bills and legislation in advance. You can have time for yourself and your team to look it over and kind of know what you're voting on, right?
It really depends. I mean, you would think, Justin, that you would have some time to get the legislation, look at it, discuss it, make comments. Sometimes that doesn't happen. And in a deal like this, unfortunately, this is not uncommon. But the problem, I guess, the problem really was with the substance of this deal. This deal was spent down a huge chunk of the surplus, and it did so in a way that when there was some time, once it was released, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which is not partisan, they're like the fiscal, you know, experts in the state, essentially said this would create a structural deficit of almost $3 billion. So to your point, Justin, you kind of negotiate this stuff behind closed doors, you kind of drop it at the last minute, and then, you know, the nonpartisan experts look at it and they're like, by the way, this is going to blow a hole in the budget. It's another reason why, hey, why don't we have a more inclusive process and let everyone in on the discussion so we can discuss it and figure out what the best path forward is.
Should there be any concern amongst voters that a bipartisan group apparently talked behind closed doors and thought this was a great idea, but then a nonpartisan group had to be the one to come forward and say, this is actually going to cost us a lot more than we realize? Shouldn't the people making these conversations happen know that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the reasons this wasn't a good deal, is that it, you know, when you really dug into it and looked at the details, you're like, this is being presented in a way in an election year to look really, you know, if I told you I have a plan that will cure cancer, create world peace and give everyone a puppy dog, you would be like, yeah, that sounds really good. But then when you like kind of look at it and have like the experts kind of go through it and they start identifying red flags, it just comes back to the point of like, hey, let's have a different process next time and let's put together something that, you know, is good structurally for the state and not, you know, not something that maybe looks good right now that might provide like a little bit of relief on the front end, but to some people, but not all people, and then potentially blow a hole in the budget, which honestly, we're seeing how that's going at the federal level, and it's not pretty, and it's hard to fix it once it's blown, as we can see at the federal level. So,
yeah, and right now, I mean, everybody is paying very close attentions on what's going on with money everywhere, be it their own wallets or how it's being spent at the local, state, and federal level. I do want to dive into this a little bit more. Unfortunately, we do have to take a very quick break, but when we come back, we're going to dive in a little bit more here on Community Comment with Representative of 48th Assembly District, Andrew Heisel. Stay with us on 95.3 WBEV.
Ready to make a splash and make a difference? Join Kalahari Resorts for Family and Friends Night September 25th and 26th, where your getaway helps support the Good Karma Brand's John Moser Children's Radiothon. Enjoy America's largest indoor water park, arcade fun, and unforgettable family time, all close to home. Rooms start at just $179 and include two queen beds, water park passes for up to four, and no additional resort fee.
Hurry, rooms are limited. Offer expires August 25th.
Book now and turn your next weekend into a family adventure that gives back.
It's easier than ever to check your annual mammogram off your to-do list. Walk into Prairie Ridge Health in Columbus on the last Tuesday of any month to get your yearly mammogram. No appointment or referral needed. If you're over 40 years old and due for a yearly screening mammogram, just bring your insurance card and the name of your physician with you. Visit anytime between 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on the last Tuesday of every month. Learn more about the walk-in program and confirm upcoming dates at prairieridge.health.
At Gruber Law Offices, we take great pride in helping those who have trusted us after a serious accident. Our team has the knowledge, resources, and experience to get you the results you deserve. Don't wait to get the help you need. Make the right call. Call Gruber Law Offices today, proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. One call, that's all.
Celebrate art, blooms, and creativity at the Wisconsin Arts and Peony Festival in Beaver Dam, the second weekend of June. Explore the art market on Saturday. Enjoy stunning art and quilt exhibits and a live chalk art competition. Take part in community mural painting, art and sewing classes, colorful yarn bombing displays, and the fan favorite brunch and blossom stroll. Tour Oven's Peony Farm, the largest cut peony farm in Wisconsin, and experience the brand new Jung's Garden Center Peony Field Tours. Plan your blooming weekend getaway now at Visit Beaver Dam.com.
The Senior Expo Council, with partnership from Visiting Angels, presents the 2026 Beaver Dam Senior Expo on Wednesday, June 10th. It's going to be at the Beaver Dam Family Center on Gould Street next to the high school. Visit with 40-plus vendors, gather information and material, and win fantastic prizes.
The Expo opens at 9 a.m. Bingo at 9:30 and 11:30, and a Master Gardener presentation at 10:45.
Free admission and lunch is available for purchase from the WBEV Rotfry.
Log on SeniorExpoCouncil.com for the complete schedule. Like us on Facebook.
The Senior Expo Council, with partnership from Visiting Angels, presents the 2026 Beaver Dam Senior Expo on Wednesday, June 10th.
Thanks to our gold sponsors, New Medical Center and Hearing Life.
The Beaver Dam Senior Expo, informative, empowering, and fun. We'll see you Wednesday, June 10th.
They keep you informed on the Dodge County landscape. We keep the inside of your home looking great. Professional Floor Covering welcomes you to the next segment of Community Comment on 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge.
And welcome back into Community Comment. Justin and Jewelski here with you. And once again, we are talking with 48th District Representative Andrew Heisel. And, sir, once again, we were talking about that special session that had happened recently, and that was for the $1.8 billion surplus deal that was in place. If my memory serves, and by memory I mean I had some notes here that I took a little bit earlier, this had passed the Assembly, failed in the Senate. The Senate, it looks like every Democratic representative in the Senate voted no on this. Was that purely based on the fact that you guys had a feeling it was a bad idea, or were you guys quickly running numbers, or was it just the speed with which it was being brought forward? What led you guys to all unify so well on this?
Yeah, so in the State Assembly, where I'm a member, I voted against it. Some of my Democratic colleagues voted for it. So it goes over the Senate. And, every single Democratic senator, as well as I believe three Republicans, voted against it. Mm-hmm. So there was bipartisan opposition in the Senate. So I can't speak to the Republicans, what their thoughts were on this deal. Might be blowing the hole in the budget, I don't know. But I will say that I was really impressed that Leader Hesselbein, Dianne Hesselbein, really stood strongly against this, and she united her members to all vote against it. And I think it bodes well for her future and the future of her caucus. I think it looks pretty clear that they're likely going to have the majority next spring in the Senate. The Democrats will. And with that kind of leadership and that kind of approach, standing up for the right thing and not giving into political gimmicks, I think Leader Hesselbein is going to do a great job.
Earlier, before we went to break, we kind of talked about how right now Americans are very focused on expenses, the cost of things, where money is going, how it's being spent. There's a lot of division on how things are maybe being spent on the federal level. But of course, if you really boil it down, you know, we also have to think about what's happening on the state level, and we have to think about locally. And I know one of the things that initially was being put out there, and a lot of people were very forwardly thinking this was a positive thing, this bill, was that it was supposed to put money back into the pockets of some Wisconsinites. But I heard, and maybe you can correct me on this, that it wouldn't have been necessarily all Wisconsinites.
Yeah, exactly, Justin. I mean, you pretty much summed it up. This idea is like, hey, there's something going on in the state, which we've seen it over a decade now, where everyone's property taxes keep going up. They keep going up and up and up. And it's like, and it's just, it's getting to the point where people just can't deal with it anymore. People on fixed incomes, seniors living on Social Security. They bought their house 30 years ago. I literally ran into a woman knocking doors in my district in Sun Prairie. She's in her late 60s. She's like, I bought my house 20 years ago, paid it off. But right now, the taxes and the insurance, because that's going up too, is going to potentially cause me to have to move out of here. And she's like, I didn't plan on this. I don't have any increased income to deal with this. I'm living on Social Security. And so the problem is that the state keeps giving less and less of our state income and sales tax that it collects back to the schools and back to the municipalities. We're actually shortchanging schools $3,400 per kid based on 2009 numbers. And that's why people's property taxes are going up. This deal would have said, okay, some of you will get up to $300 in a check. Some of you won't. If you're strictly on Social Security, you won't get it. And like a year after that, your taxes are going up again. I mean, or they're likely to go up again because we're not fixing the structural problem. So that's why I'm just like, just say no to political gimmicks. Say yes to fixing the structural problem that we've seen now for over a decade. And I get a little exasperated by this stuff because it's so obvious, and it just annoys me when people step up and like, oh, we got a solution here, and we got this great, you know, we're going to give you a little check here in your election year, and I hope you just forget about it. And then meanwhile, the problem still remains. So we got to stop doing that in state government. We have got to be real with people, and we got to fix the system because it's not working right now.
So I'm guessing then by your thought process that fixing the system might not necessarily mean taking one-time surplus dollars and trying to apply it to ongoing commitments or issues.
Excellent way to put it, yes.
Now, is there a better way to be using those one-time surplus dollars then?
Yeah, I mean, what we should do is we should sit down and be like, hey, what have we been doing that doesn't work anymore? And what we've been doing is shifting the funding of cops, firefighters, schools, more and more back onto local taxpayers, onto their homes, basically. And the reality is that at the state level, they've been taking the monies they get, which have been going up because sales tax revenues and income tax revenues have gone up, and they give them away in these, like, special interest tax breaks. I'm like, we need to like switch that around. We need to go back to the good old days when the state, instead of like handing out this money to like wealthy individuals and corporations, send it back to the taxpayer to pay for their schools, to pay for their police, so that they then don't have to go and like put their hand out through referendum and constantly beg for it from the property taxpayer. You know, right now in this state of Wisconsin, we are ranked number 10. We're in the top 10 for property taxes. Like, when did that happen? And why is that okay? And believe me, it's not because suddenly our schools got real spendy. It's because they're not, the funding we give them from the state, from our tax dollars, is not keeping up with inflation. So instead of doing like a check here or a little thing here and trying to like essentially like placate you for the next election, let's take the surplus, let's sit down, let's make some big changes and like rearrange the system so that it helps the regular person and stops sticking it to the local taxpayer, which is what we're currently doing.
Is there a way for the state to turn around and somehow invest that in a way where it can become a longer term investment back into things like schools?
Yeah, for example, we could actually, there's a bill, the name is escaping me, but my colleagues, Rep. Cruz and Rep. Phelps, authored this bill, and I'm an original co-sponsor, but basically it would use the surplus to pay down our property taxes. It would essentially pay them down. So that, again, we wouldn't get the credit. Like, I wouldn't be able to be like, hey, I'm a state rep who just, you know, sent you a $300 check, but the following year, you would be benefiting because you wouldn't be getting taxed as much in your home. And see, I think it really, that's what this comes down to. It's like people trying to get credit instead of trying to fix the problem. We got to fix the problem. That's why people don't just send us here to like self-aggrandize and self-promote. They send us here to the state capitol to fix the problems that are affecting people's lives. And costs are going through the roof. They're going through the roof. And state property and property taxes are just a huge part of that. So, yeah. So I would just say I am on board with the structural change. I'm not on board with something that's a little stopgap, you know, kind of election year thing that, you know, gives some people a few bucks. It's just not worth it for anybody.
Now, along those lines, going back just a little bit to talking about education, because that's one area where we have seen, especially in the area here on Dodge County area, we've seen a lot of different school districts have to go to referendum. We've seen referendums fail and die in voting where the communities don't pick them up. And then questions about the futures of certain school districts. And I guess a question that I think I hear a lot of people kind of asking is, how do we have a former educator as the head of our state right now and have many people who believe education is important to fund, and yet we're not finding ways to keep up on that funding level?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say that the governor, to his credit, has put in his budget each biennium, you know, money to fix the structural issue. It's just in the final negotiations, the deal that gets negotiated that he ultimately signs off on doesn't have those structural changes. I can't speak to it. I don't understand why it's happened that way, but I do understand it's not like he's not, it's not that he's not asking for it. He's asked for it each biennium. And I think that's why there might be a really opportunity finally to do something, because if we do get majorities in the state legislature and the assembly and the Senate, and we have a Democratic governor, I think we could finally just fix it. And I, you know, if we earn that position, that could actually change something that's been out there for over a decade, a problem that's been there for over a decade.
There you go. Well, Representative Andrew Heisel on with us. We are going to take another break here on Community Comment. When we come back, we're going to change gears just a little bit. We're going to talk about another hot-button topic that seems to be across the state. So stay tuned with us here on 95.3 WBEV.
It's almost time to walk with an angel. Join the Good Karma Brand's John Moser Children's Radiothon at the 18th Annual Noel's Angel Walk on Thursday, June 25th. Registration starts at 6 a.m. and then the walk steps off at 7 a.m. Choose from a 1 mile or a 2.5 mile course, beginning and ending at Waterworks Park in Beaver Dam. All proceeds raised will benefit the Good Karma Brand's John Moser Children's Radiothon. Find more info and pre-register today on the Radiothon page at dailydodge.com.
The Beaver Dam Police Charities and K-9 Golf Outing is accepting registrations. The event will take place on Saturday, June 27th at Beaver Dam Country Club at 8:30. Your registration includes golf with cart and dinner. It's just $90 per player or $360 for a team of four. That's the BD Police Charities and K-9 Golf Outing on June 27th. For more information, contact Matt at 887-4613, extension 524, or head to the Beaver Dam K-9 Unit Facebook page for a link to register online.
Hey, it's Stacy from Slumberland, Beaver Dam and Watertown. Stay tuned to my friends here at 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge, live from the Slumberland Furniture Studio.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The U.S. launching airstrikes against Iran and Tehran firing back at U.S. allies in the region.
It's not clear what the president is going to do. Those strikes that were in response to the Iranians taking down that Apache helicopter were said to be proportional. That was according to U.S. officials. They said it was a proportional response to unjustified Iranian aggression. But now today, the president in a social media post indicating that there could be more to come, saying now they will have the price to pay. But he says that is because the Iranians have taken too long to negotiate.
ABC's Karen Travers at the White House. Rising gas prices pushing inflation to their highest level in 3 years. Overall, prices up 4.2% in May from a year ago and 0.5% higher than a month ago. Bill Gates on Capitol Hill right now, speaking before a congressional panel investigating Jeffrey Epstein. He calls his meeting with Epstein a grave error in judgment. This is ABC News.
Now this news update on Wisconsin Radio Network, I'm Ted Ayland. Nomination papers from 7 Democratic and 1 Republican candidate for governor are certified by the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which voted Tuesday to deny ballot access to Minocqua Brewing Company owner Kirk Bangsted, ruling that he fell about 500 signatures short of getting on the August primary ballot. Charges against a Franklin man accused of kidnapping a woman who turned him down. Police say 22-year-old Angelo Liberto started dating the woman last September, but she broke it off before the relationship got physical. Liberto started showing up at the victim's home and allegedly took the woman at gunpoint in his car. And tourism spending in Wisconsin continues to increase. Governor Tony Evers says the state's tourism industry hit new highs in 2025, with 118 million visitors, up 3.5 million from the year before. Tad Allen, Wisconsin Radio Network News.
At first, it was just for fun. A little blackjack here, some slots there, a couple of scratch-offs, just a little action. I'd win a bit, lose a bit, whatever. But then it became constant. It was all I wanted to do. I was lying to my friends and family, telling myself I've got this, when I really didn't. The truth, you don't need a jackpot to win. You just need to know when to stop. If gambling's starting to take over your time, your money, your vibe, you don't have to figure it out alone.
If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 800-GAMBLE-5. Text 850-888-HOPE or visit wi-problemgamblers.org. Free, confidential, and judgment-free. Gamble responsibly, and everyone's a winner. A message brought to you by the Wisconsin Lottery.
Chance of severe storms with fog and spots early today. Otherwise, cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun. Highs level off around 86. Southerly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Severe storms likely and foggy tonight. Lows dip down to about 66. Cloudy skies expected. Chance of thunderstorms with fog and spots early tomorrow, 84. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on 95.3 WBEV. Powered by Daily Dodge. Right now, 82.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Save big on auto accessories at Menards. We have what you need to keep your vehicle looking like new. Give your car the care it needs with spray wax from Turtle Wax. Just wash your car, rinse, spray it on, and dry for the quickest way to a high-gloss shine. Save big on all Turtle Wax products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
These are the happenings in your community. Thank you for joining this edition of Community Comment on 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge, presented by Professional Floor Covering.
You are listening to Community Comment, brought to you by Professional Floor Covering. They've also got Pro Edge Sharpening. So if this incoming weather, this rain greens up your yard and you get out there to cut it and you notice it's tearing, not cutting, might be a good idea to bring your lawnmower blades into them at Pro Edge Sharpening. They're located inside Professional Floor Covering, full-service blade sharpening shop, sharpening blades of all kinds. If it's got an edge, they can sharpen it. So get those lawnmower blades in now. Keep in mind they can also do saw blades, drill bits, hole saws, knives, scissors, chipper blades, ag blades, and almost anything else with an edge. Give them a call if you'd like, 920-887-8341. We're going to go ahead and bring back in 48th Assembly District Representative Andrew Heisel. Andrew, again, thank you for being on the show with me today.
Yay, happy to be here.
Next topic I want to bring up with you is, it's a big hot-button topic. As a matter of fact, locally here in Dodge County, the Dodge County Board actually just had a meeting where they are looking to send off to committee and potentially have a public hearing on doing some sort of moratorium on AI data centers. And not necessarily to prevent them from coming ever, but to maybe put some rules in place. I think a lot of people are feeling like there's not a lot of rules in place for this type of business.
That feeling is accurate. That is an accurate feeling that reflects reality, which is there are no statewide rules in place currently for data centers. And we're talking about some serious, like you said, this is a big issue. As of March of this year, there's $46 billion worth of data center development projects in Wisconsin that are currently underway. And without any kind of statewide rules or regulations, it really does fall on the shoulders of municipalities to step up and take steps to ensure that their residents and their interests are taken into account. Because once these things are built and operational, you know, the horse is out of the barn, so to speak.
Now, of course, we always appreciate when local municipalities take a little bit of control over what's happening within their counties and such. But as I learned sitting in on that meeting, if the county decides to put some sort of moratorium in place and institute some sort of rules, that's only going to apply to areas where the county has jurisdiction. And so cities can still circumvent that. You know, certain villages, things like that can circumvent it. So is it time for the state to think about putting in place some statewide rules?
It is. It is time for the state to adopt some common sense, thoughtful statewide rules around data centers. Absolutely. And what we've seen this in a number of areas, that this past legislative session, there's just been, in areas where there's been some disagreements, there hasn't been nothing's been passed. And so if you don't pass any rule whatsoever, then you have a vacuum. And it's kind of then what you are describing, which is, it's sort of patchwork. It's a patchwork of a regulation. And yeah, we definitely need a statewide approach. One, to ensure that utility costs don't go through the roof. Two, to ensure that people who live near these things don't deal with the externalities, pollution, noise, vibration. I mean, I heard down in Texas that some of these data centers are like rendered areas like almost uninhabitable. And then the third thing is we need to make sure that this is not contributing to our overall issue around, you know, the environment. Like, we've got to really take it seriously that we're transitioning to cleaner forms of energy that are more sustainable and don't, you know, continue to cause these problems we're seeing in the environment. So these are all the reasons why Wisconsin needs a rule. And I did support Assembly Bill. I co-sponsored Assembly Bill 722, which would have addressed some of the issues that I described. But at the end of the day, we need to do something. And yeah, it's definitely going to be something we're going to be talking about beginning of next year, next session.
Now, you touched on a couple of different topics there that kind of relate to the concerns that people have. I'm going to start with the first one that comes to my mind, which is that conversation about renewable energy. I know a lot of states, the country as a whole at one point, was in this mindset of trying to move towards more sustainable energy sources, kind of phasing out a lot of fossil fuels in a lot of areas. And people are saying that data centers are simply going to revive that need for it, because our renewable energy sources just cannot support the load that data centers are going to bring on board. So should we be requiring data centers to provide power for themselves to at least help support what they do?
I mean, that's one thing we can look at, and it's a valid concern, because if you don't have increased power generation, but you increase the demand, as we know, in a supply demand situation, your costs are going to go up. I mean, we already can see costs going, like, a great example is you can also address it on the supply side, like what's going on in Iran, which you have a reduction in supply. It's not even oil we get, but because it's supply that goes in the overall market, you see our costs going up here. So if demand goes up, if supply goes down, you're in a situation where your costs are going to go through the roof. Renewables are like, they're really an opportunity to add to our generation without the externalities that we really like don't want. I mean, who wants more stuff in the air that you got to breathe? I mean, nobody wants that. It is something that I think we should look to your question at these data centers, which require massive amounts of water and massive amounts of energy to keep them from overheating. We should say, hey, can you generate on site some of the energy you're going to use? That's something we need to look at. It's an interesting idea, promising idea.
Now, another thing that people are thinking about and talking about is whether or not These are actually benefiting the economy or the tax base of the cities or municipalities that they're being put in, when the benefit is sometimes being delayed by as much as 20 years. So is that going to be something where by the time they do start making an impact, that impact is not going to be something the city can recover from for the detriment it's going to cause beforehand?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that needs to be considered, which is what's the cost, what's the benefit? There's some studies where we're looking at these data centers. The data centers are expected to create new jobs, but it's still only going to be about 0.09% of our overall labor market. So the impact in terms of jobs is not like something that warrants us to like give them everything they want and expect nothing in return. But if we're looking just at the gross domestic product, yeah, it's going to add some value. But again, you have to take into consideration the cost. And what really is, I think, concerning for a lot of people, and I hear about this, I've been contacted a lot in my office. A lot of people have contacted me about data centers. The concern is and in divorce, they rejected a data center, is that certain people are going to get totally, they're going to have to bear more of the cost than other people. And if you just drop a data center in there and you just don't really think about it, don't vet it, don't weigh the pros and the cons, don't require regulations to ensure power generation, ensure, you know, renewables, all these other things, then you got your locality there. You got the people in that community paying more than other people. And that's just not fair.
So I want to move on to another thing you had mentioned, which is the environmental impact. Initially, yeah. A lot of these data centers that were put in place, they're coming in very fast. They're being built without real understanding of how they're going to impact the environment they were sitting on. There has been people who are pro the data centers who have said that, you know, the newer ones that are being put in and being proposed are newer technology, closed loop systems. They're quieter. They don't have as much of an impact on the environment. If something does catastrophically go wrong, there shouldn't be an environmental impact for that. Some of them are even going so far as to purchase up twice or three times the land they need for the data center in order to return some of it back to more wildlife and nature type, campuses surrounding it. Is that something where that's going to help maybe mitigate, or we feel like that makes the representatives who have to make laws about this feel a little more comfortable that the technology is getting better? Or do we need to make sure that we're really regulating what kind of data centers we're allowing?
We definitely have to like not take anyone's word for it, and we need to confirm and verify. Based on what I understand, a modern data center, a hyperscale data center, can use as much energy as 50 to 100,000 households. So their energy usage is highly intensive, and that's really at the root of a lot of the problem here, is that if you connect them to the grid and add it like overnight 50,000 households to your grid, it's going to cause crazy outcomes for other people. I mean, what if there's no limit, you know, in terms of like the demand, or the demand is so great. I mean, what is that going to do to the average person's bill? I think you could say, yeah, we're going to make improvements on noise and vibration. Again, that's great. So let's have a statewide standard that takes into account that we can make these things quieter, or we can make these things less, less impactful on the environment. Let's put it in a state regulation, put it into a state law. Nobody should have a problem with it because it's clearly possible. So again, I think I really appreciate what localities are doing, because they need to do something, but we need to really not drop the ball on this next year. And we need to pass some legislation that is common sense, that takes into consideration different factors, and put something in place to protect communities across the state, not just those that happen to take it up on their own.
There you go. 40th Assembly District Representative Andrew Heisel. We're going to take one more break here on Community Comment. When we come back, we're going to switch gears yet again. Got another topic we're going to bring up with you, and we'll do that more here on 95.3 WBEV, where we're powered by Daily Dodge.
Wheel of Meat! Tune in Monday mornings at 7:40 and listen for your chance to spin the Leroy Meats Wheel of Meat. It's stuffed with specialty meat items. The Leroy Meats Wheel of Meat, Monday mornings on 95.3 WBEV.
Prizes, exclusive experiences, even cash money. You want it? We've got it. Find a list of all contests and official rules by visiting dailydodge.com/contests. That's dailydodge.com/contests.
Ugh, Randy, my kitchen and bathroom are straight out of the 90s.
Oh, like Friends reruns 90s? Or dial-up internet 90s?
Full-on dial-up, Randy. Oak cabinets, busy countertops, it's all very talk to the hand.
Sounds like your spaces need some serious upgrades. A professional floor covering, we do more than floors. We've got cabinets, countertops, and design help to take your kitchen from all that to all this.
So no more as if every time I walk in?
Totally. We'll help you ditch the outdated look and bring your kitchen and bathroom into this century. You'll totes be feeling like you're in a spa, but like without all the whispering. Unless you want that, I guess. Get the process started by visiting proflr.com or stop by our showroom in Beaver Dam.
Nice, bro. These renovations are gonna be the bomb.
No doubt.
The Senior Expo Council, with partnership from Visiting Angels, presents the 2026 Beaver Dam Senior Expo on Wednesday, June 10th. It's going to be at the Beaver Dam Family Center on Gould Street next to the high school. Visit with 40-plus vendors, gather information and material, and win fantastic prizes.
The Expo opens at 9 a.m., bingo at 9:30 and 11:30, and a Master Gardener presentation at 10:45.
Free admission and lunch is available for purchase from the WBEV Rock Fry.
Log on SeniorExpoCouncil.com for the complete schedule. Like us on Facebook.
The Senior Expo Council, with partnership from Visiting Angels, presents the 2026 Beaver Dam Senior Expo on Wednesday, June 10th.
Thanks to our gold sponsors, New Medical Center and Hearing Life.
The Beaver Dam Senior Expo, informative, empowering, and fun. We'll see you Wednesday, June 10th.
As we all live longer, age really is just a number, but retirement is so much more than one. Hi, I'm Edward Jones Financial Advisor Monica Magali, and I want to know what retirement means to you. Together, we can take a look at the big picture and make a strategy to help you reach your goals, because you can't prepare for the unexpected if you don't know where you're headed. Call me at 920-392-5181 or stop in at 203 Corporate Drive, Suite 300 in Beaver Dam today. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Wally Lukashinsky, reporting live from the Beaver Dam Family Center as we have yet another Brat Fry in our Brat Fry summer season right now. We're out here for the Senior Expo. Again, right now, over 40 vendors, people already making their way in all throughout. We got brats going, pernats, $2 for a brat. That comes with the drink, too. And don't forget, you have a chance to win $4,000 this summer, courtesy of the Hometown Glass and Improvement and Newman Pool Summer Sweepstakes. All you have to do is show up to Brat Fries. Show up to five of them. We'll give you a stamp card. As soon as you get to five, you'll be entered to win at the end of our summer, September 3rd, at our last Brat Fry of the year at Hometown Glass and Improvement. We'll pull out a winner. Somebody's going to go away with $4,000 cold hard cash. Second place, $750. And then third place is $250. So $5,000 of cash prizes. Chance to get a winner. All you have to do, come out to the Beaver Dam Family Center Senior Expo today. Make sure you come on out. The brats are already smelling good. We'll make sure to see you here right across the street from the Beaver Dam High School. Way too easy to find us. We'll see you out here for another Brat Fry.
Providing this community beautiful floors and so much more, the team at Professional Floor Covering can't wait to connect with our friends through today's community comment on 95.3 WBEV, powered by Daily Dodge.
And welcome back into community comment. We are talking with 48th Assembly District Representative Andrew Heisel. And we wanted to switch gears a little bit and touch on the topic of foster care. Now, Andrew, unless I'm mistaken, with the session kind of being wrapped now for right now, the last bill that you guys had didn't go as far as I think some people would have liked.
Yeah, so the foster care system is something that I have been learning about. And the way I've been learning about it is people are coming in to meet with me. And I will say that it's been primarily faith-based groups who are coming in to meet with me about foster kids, foster parents. I've also had an opportunity to actually meet with some of my constituents who are, have been dealing with the foster care system, a specific situation where, you know, a foster family reunites the kid with the bio parent and some of the challenges that go, that come in around that, as you can imagine, if you've been raising a child for a long time and suddenly they leave your home and your other kid is like, what's going on? So I've learned a lot. And what I've come to understand is this one group I just met with called Bridges of Hope. And they're a nonprofit. They're religious focused. And part of their mission is to helping foster kids who, when they turn 18 in Wisconsin, they're done. Like, let's say you're a foster kid in the home, and a lot of foster families are like this. They literally need the money to pay the bills for the kid. When you turn 18, you age out. The money stops. And 20% of foster kids in Wisconsin turning 18 are immediately homeless. 21 out of five. And half of them are going to experience homelessness after they turn 18, within the first 2 years. And like, to me, what kind of system is that? So these faith-based groups come in, and this one, like the one I just mentioned, Bridges of Hope, they create they call them blessing bags. They're basically apartment starter kits. And they got all the stuff you need, like the basics, like towels, washcloths, like a saucepan, a frying pan. And they put it all in these boxes, and they give it to these kids who literally, like last week, could have been like in high school, hanging out with their friends, and are now literally trying to like figure out where they're going to live. So when I learned about that, and then I have met with other folks, there's these other faith-based groups that work trying to give support to foster parents, because it can be really stressful when you're working with kids maybe who are at risk, have some need, special needs, and you're a foster parent, you're trying to figure out how to handle it. They actually support those parents. They provide them meals, they provide them counseling. And I just think we need to do more at the state level, frankly, to help foster families and also to support foster kids. So it just isn't this cliff when they turn 18, because it's just not fair for anybody.
Now, I guess for me, who's somebody's, you know, I'm thinking about, I'm using myself as an example. I turned 18 at the start of my senior year of high school. So I'm still essentially a student. I'm still, you know, I may be age-wise an adult, but I'm still a kid in the sense of I haven't even graduated. I have zero means to support myself. So that could be happening to kids in the foster system right now.
So there is an option, I believe, for them to keep the kid in the system until they graduate high school.
Okay.
So if you do turn 18 your senior year, yeah, you're not like homeless while you're going to high school. But like, I think about when I was 18, I mean, I barely could figure out how to like, you know, get dressed and go to show up at my job. I mean, I still was like, my parents continued to like really support me in terms of like, you know, how do you balance a checkbook? You know, how do you save money? How do you make sure you pay your bills on time so you don't destroy your credit? How do you, you know, be simple things that I think young adults still need support with. We need to recognize that there's states like Pennsylvania where kids don't age out of the foster system until they're 21. And it just, there's things like that. There's also grant programs that I know the governor has put in his budget to help provide targeted support for kids who need it, so they're not homeless when they're 18. You know, and that hasn't been, that's been stripped from the budget every biennium by the Republicans. I think we need to stop doing that. I think we need to support foster kids. Right now, if you're in the foster care system, the odds of you graduating a four-year college, out of every 100 kids, three will graduate a four-year college program. I don't think you should be destined for bad outcomes in your life because you had the misfortune or just the odds are that you were in the foster system. I don't want to say it's a misfortune because there can be some amazing foster family situations, but just because you're in the foster system, you should not be destined to perform lower than everybody else. It's like, that's fundamentally unfair. And I don't think anybody thinks that makes sense. So again, I really support policy change. I support looking at extending the aid to kids age out. I also, these programs that can be provide targeted support for things like blessing bags, you know, these things that like common sense things that people should, you know, young adults should have access to, so they don't have to be homeless. And so they can have a decent quality of life. I think that's important.
Now, is this something where you'd mentioned one of the other states, I think you said Pennsylvania has it extended 21. Is this something where maybe the support could shift from the foster family to the foster kid themselves at 18 and then maybe teeter off or taper off as they get as they reach 21?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't have to be like it's the same exact system until they hit 21. But I just don't think it should be like it shouldn't just be like a light switch. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just not, that's just not the way to treat somebody. I think there should be some sort of a shift. Maybe it does go with the kid. Like I said, maybe you've got your counties, your county, you know, social service agencies that access the funding. There's people that I know in Dane County that are specifically tasked. We're trying to check in on these kids to make sure they're not like homeless and sleeping under a bridge. If they had access to funding that maybe help them with their down payments, or security deposit on an apartment, that would be something that if you had those funds available, it wouldn't be necessarily keeping them in the home until they're 21 if they're foster parent, but it's giving them at least a bridge, you know, a bridge to like a better life. And on a case by case basis, I mean, if some foster families have a lot of resources, right? Maybe they've got a lot of money and they're just going to keep supporting that kid. And that's awesome. If the kid needs it, you wouldn't give them the targeted funding, you know, but for those who need it, you just don't want to pull the rug out from underneath them and say, hey, good luck. You know, it's a tough life out there. I just don't think that's the moral thing to do. And that's why I really like the fact that faith-based organizations is part of their ministry. I mean, I support all sorts of faith-based organizations where, you know, I just love it when they practice what they preach, you know, when they're out there trying to help people. It's really, it makes me feel really good. And I just want to make sure we have good state policies to help support what they're doing.
Well, unfortunately, Andrew, we've reached the point where we've hit all the time that we possibly have for today. But before I let you go, is there a way for people who want to get their opinion out to you, voice their opinion on any of these topics or other topics that they feel are important within your district, or maybe they can't feel like they're getting traction with their own district representative? How do they reach out?
Yeah, well, so, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. You can just call my office, which is 608-237-9148. I got an email, rep.heisel@legis.wisconsin.gov. You can go online and find all that stuff there. Yeah, happy to chat. And no, Justin, thanks very much. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
No, definitely a pleasure speaking with you as well. And hopefully your lawn greens up from this impending rain we've got coming our way.
And our farmers get the rain they need.
There you go. Thank you again for coming on. You have a great day.
You too.
That has been 48th Assembly District Representative Andrew Heisel here on Community Comment, and that will do it for today's Community Comment.